great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You may have encountered an injured bird in the wild at some point, and if so, you may have wondered what to do with it. That's where our next guest comes in. Marge Gibson with us in our Wausau studios. Great to be in Wausau today for this program. Marge is founder and executive director of Raptor Education Group, Inc. It's a nonprofit organization based in Antigo, dedicated to the care and rehabilitation of injured or orphaned native bird species. And she does a lot of public education on wildlife issues as well. So we'll talk with her about the impact maybe of the snow and that cold spring. It may have had some effect on our migrating birds. I'm sure it did. We'll hear some bird rehabilitation stories. And as always, you can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. You may have had an incident that you want to share or just a question about wildlife rehabbing. Marge Gibson, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you, Larry.
So for those who aren't familiar with the Raptor Education Group, talk about, give us the background of this organization. You're a nonprofit.
We're a nonprofit. We came back to Wisconsin from my husband's native Southern California, where we had a large facility in 1990 and developed Raptor Education Group. So we've been around for quite a while, and we take care of any native species, avian species, that's injured, babies, or needs help in some way. And we also do, as you say, a lot of public education, really an important companion to the rehabilitation.
You know, when I think about that public education, one of the terms you hear a lot or the sayings is let nature take care of itself. It gets used a lot when you talk about wildlife. That is not necessarily a good thing, is it?
One of my least favorite sayings in the world, I think. But actually, I think that, you know, society is changing a bit. We, for many years, we were told to, and reasonably, that we weren't supposed to touch wildlife in any way, especially native birds, because they are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which is a federal government. So people had kind of a hands-off sort of attitude toward them. However, things are changing in our world, and our society's changing. We have had a lot of serious budget cuts, both state and federally, in the wildlife area. So now it has fallen more to the public to have a more active role. That doesn't mean you can take them home. They're still protected, and you have to have special permits to care for them. But you can have play a role and have a large part to helping them. And if you find a sick one, obviously, the thing that's humane and that's a big part of who we are is to pick it up, get it in a safe place, and then call a wildlife rehabilitator.
And that's something, actually, we'd already had an email from Krista about that. What do you do if you find a sick or injured bird? Who do you contact? It's a wildlife rehabilitator. How do you find that person?
Well, in all states in our country, we have, if you go to the state agency, the State Wildlife Agency, of course, here in Wisconsin, it's the DNR, go to their website and just type in wildlife rehabilitation. They have a list of rehabilitators in their area, what species they take care of. Some take care of mammals, some amphibians, some, you know, various things. Not everyone does the same thing, but you can find out who, for instance, does birds in your area, if it's a bird, and give them a call and keep the little one safe until you can get it to them or that they can come and get it with a transporter.
You'd probably rather not be so busy, but when it comes down to it, the number of birds that you work with in the course of a year are staggering to my mind. You haven't mentioned that yet, so I hope. How many do you work with?
We care for about 100 eagles a year, and then about 900 other patients as well. And we do everything from trumpeter swans to hummingbirds, raising baby hummingbirds, for instance, things like that. So anything in feathers, if it's native and federally protected, we take care of it.
And so what, in terms of taking care of it, what are the responsibilities, or what do you do?
What don't we do?
What the heck do you do? I mean, you've done a little of everything when it comes to birds.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is interesting, and it really does keep you active and your mind going, I'll tell you. But it really depends on the species. Baby birds, for instance, have to be fed every 20 minutes their first week of life. Some of them go from hatch to flight within 8 to 9 days, which is staggering when you think about it. So they have to have, consequently, they have to have a lot of protein and nutrition that goes into that so they can develop those feathers in that rapid short time. Some birds, like eagles, for instance, we have 25 at home right now, maybe 26. I think we just admitted another. And they can eat about 3 pounds of meat a day. So we are, not only do we have to purchase a lot of meat, a lot of beef heart, they can't metabolize fat. So this isn't, cheap meat that they can eat, no hamburger for them. So we end up having to, if there's a deer hit by a car, we have a permit to take it or to get it covered. And then, but we are the ones who have to he'll have to butcher it and, cut
take
it up.
Take care of it.
And serve it to our patients, right.
And you told me you stopped on the way over here and picked up a turkey that had been hit by a car. And that was going to be food for somebody.
Old habits die hard. I actually passed it, and then I thought, I'm seeing, 20 pounds of meat on the road. And as a nonprofit, of course, food and cost is always primary on our mind. So I did turn around and go pick him up, and he's in my car right now waiting for me to take him home.
And he will be providing a dinner for somebody.
He will be, for many somebodies, actually. And we have a baby owl in now that really needs the bones from a little animal because they develop their own bones from that. So there's parts of him that will be going to that baby owl.
So Well, let's talk about eagles for just a minute. All those eagles that you've got with us and all with you, typically, why does one come to you? What are the problems that are associated with them?
There's really no typical day. People always want to know, what do we do? And there's really no typical day. Just as there's every patient is different. They run the gamut from mostly human-caused illnesses or injuries. The rarity was like we had this snowstorm that, that was a natural event. But that's very rare in the wildlife situation. So hit by cars, shot, unfortunately. We still have that happening in our area. Poisonings, a lot of poisonings, a lot of lead poisoning, as well as insecticide poisoning, rodent poisoning, those sorts of things. And, just a number of things, tangles with balloons, with strings and things that are in the trees, fishing tackle. So there's a number of things.
You mentioned the bad weather. Did that really cause some problem or some issues in your area?
It was really serious. We put out on social media, that our robins and many of the neotropicals were starting to come back. And, of course, they're coming from very warm parts of the country. And many of them are insectivores. They eat insects only. So they get here, and when you have, we had, I think, 30 inches of snow right as the big flock of robins was coming through. They don't have access to the ground in any way. And they could maybe, be sustained, through other means or through the fat on their bodies for a few days, possibly even a week. But we were going into 3 weeks, and they were dying. And it was very disheartening. People were calling and wanting to do something. But it was a very difficult situation. Not only robins, there were many, many species, including loons, who couldn't land on our frozen lakes and were having fallouts and were landing on asphalt and that sort of thing, and they can't get off of that.
They can't fly away,
right. So we had loons, we had grebes, we had all many, many species that were affected by the weather, yeah.
Marge Gibson, our guest today, she is an amazing person, and she is the chief evangelist.
There's a little of that in there.
there's got to be a little bit of that of the Raptor Education Group. You may have some questions for her or comments, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Maybe you've had an encounter or an experience to share, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. So 800-642-1234. You mentioned lead poisoning, and, you know, it's apparently a pretty common thing.
It really is. We hope that we can make some changes in, maybe our hunting techniques and just not hunting per se, but in what people use to harvest an animal. Lead is a toxin, and it's been known for, thousands of years that it's a toxin, and yet we continue to harvest animals that we feed to our family, with this toxin that can cause, low IQ, brain damage, and aggression, which is kind of an interesting fallout, too.
I was thinking about wondering a little bit why the groups that I know of are pretty much nonprofits. They're these rehabilitation groups. In the case of native birds, they are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. So you wonder, why couldn't we have some funding for programs like yours?
I think that many people in the public think we are funded. I know that, as a matter of fact, either state or federally. And it is a question, and it's a very good one. I think wildlife rehabilitation for many years was more of a hobbyist sort of thing. And it's kind of coming into its own, and, it's now much more science-based. But we're catching up. I think we're kind of catching up with the success of what we can do and putting them back out into the wild and the things that we learn from a science perspective about the species that we treat and care for. So we're kind of in that middle age area where we're thought of sometimes as a hobbyist, and but if you were at our facility, you would realize that's not even close.
not even close.
Right.
Well, let's take some calls. Chris in New Auburn, I think, is up first. Chris, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a 2-part question. I believe it's called buckthorn in my backyard. It's an invasive species, and I don't know how to get rid of it. And also, I've heard the birds eat these berries, and then they get poisoned or something. That's what my neighbor was telling me. Have you ever heard of these buckthorn bushes, trees?
Yeah, you want to get rid of that if it's at all possible, Chris. Buckthorn's really hard to get rid of.
Yeah, bane of our existence. I think that everyone who likes native things understands buckthorn is bad. There are a lot of things that non-native that are that don't work well with our native species, and that's one of the things that's a good reason to get rid of it.
Yeah. I think what happens with birds is that they eat the berries and then they spread the seeds from the berries. That's why it's such an invasive. They fly away and then they poop, to be perfectly honest, and that seed comes out, and there you got another couple of buckthorn plants.
They're the planters of the world.
that's exactly right. So best advice is to get rid of those plants as much as you can, Chris. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Anne in Pittsville?
Hello?
Hi, Anne. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got a question on turkeys. I have a huge population of turkeys on my farm, but this winter I noticed they really declined. And people have told me because the eagles are coming inland more from the Mississippi River that they're just picking them out of the oak trees when they roost there at night. Is that true or not?
I would look for some other reasons. I think that, eagles do take turkeys, but if your population is being affected, that wouldn't be it. We had some really severe and deep snow this year, and we had ice layers that went through the snow, so it was hard for the birds to get to the ground. And I would say, especially, in my area, too, we were seeing a lot of starvation of our flock. So I'm pretty sure that's what was happening. Eagles wouldn't make that big dent in your population.
No. But I will say, Ann, that other people have called the show at other times and have said, well, I'm not seeing as many turkeys, and I think you're exactly right, Marge. Pretty much the issue is the weather that we've had. And a year or two ago, we had so much flooding in the spring, and that created problems for nesting and everything else. So I wouldn't blame the eagles for that one, though. I'm with Marge on that. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we are talking today with Marge Gibson. She is the founder and executive director of Raptor Education Group. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. A little bit later on, along about 11:45, as a matter of fact, we'll continue our live broadcast from Wausau talking about fishing at about 11:45. Right now, though, talking raptor rehabilitation with Marge Gibson of the Raptor Education Group. She works, her nonprofit organization is based in Antigo, dedicated to the care and rehabilitation of injured or orphaned native bird species. Love to have her with us. Hey, Marge, it's got to cost a lot of money to do the work that you do. It's not only, you talked about the thousands of pounds of food that you have to supply, but also medications and that sort of thing. How do you manage it?
You know, it isn't an easy thing, I'll be honest. I actually don't, I'm still a volunteer. I don't take a paycheck, so I can actually afford to pay some staff there, which we really need. The public has been very good about trying to help. Sometimes I'm overwhelmed with people wanting to make a difference for wildlife, and I think that's kind of that's increasing as opposed to going the other way, and it's so nice to see. But we are all donor run, and we certainly appreciate everything we can get. We're actually hoping to build a new clinic this summer, and if you saw our clinic, you would understand that we really can't. But we can't have in many more people. Once our interns get there, we're sort of shoulder to shoulder.
Well, what's your website, by the way? And you've got a Facebook page people can like as well.
The website is www.raptoreducationgroup.org, O-R-G. And our Facebook page is really very active. We've got well over 100,000 people on it. A lot of really wonderful followers that can check up on our work almost on a daily basis. And it's really a good educational tool, too. I find that people are want to know these things about birds that, you know, they wouldn't otherwise be able to ask or have the occasion to ask. We have a patient with an injury. We can discuss that and how it happened and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's great. And the Facebook page site is titled?
Raptor Education Group. It's an open page, and we would love to have you on. Jump on. Like us.
Let's go to Mike in Madison next for a call. Hi, Mike.
I'm thank you for this program. I'm wondering if your guest would know some historical information about what wiped out most of the raptors and large birds that lay on eggs in the early 19th century. Mid-19th century pesticides. I think I've read they're thinning the egg, and I think Rachel Carson was the person that first blew the whistle on this issue.
Yeah, you're right.
I think you really are right, and I appreciate your call. DDT was a very commonly used pesticide to treat mosquitoes, and I think many of us remember, you know, sort of running after the fog as they came through cities. But it does have some devastating effects and long-term effects. It does affect the eggshell of some of the larger birds, well, all birds, but if it's a heavy-bodied bird, they won't They won't be able to sit on their eggs without breaking them. Another thing that happened with some of the bigger birds, too, was overhunting or shooting for feathers and that sort of thing without protection and people having the wrong idea of what predators do. There's often misunderstanding and people reacting in fear when, in fact, it's something that's sort of nonsense.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. We'll take another call here. Let's go to Michael in Wauwatosa.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning. Hi, Larry and Marge. Marge, I love the work that you do. I just wanted to make a comment on you had mentioned the robins having a lot of trouble coming through. And I have always been a big fan of flowering crabs. And over the years, I've realized that the best flowering crabs to plant are the ones that are persistent, where they hold on to their fruit throughout the winter. And then the migrating birds come through and they glean them. And I've even seen robins living up here in the winter off of the flowering crabs. And so if anybody wants to buy a flowering crab, they should look on the tag and note that it is a persistent fruit, which stays on the tree throughout the winter. And then also look for disease resistance, of course, persistent and resistant. And then I wanted to note that I saw my first hummingbird today and an indigo bunting.
Oh, good for you.
That's exciting. Yes, thank you for the flowering crabs are really an important resource for our birds coming back and actually when they're on their way down. But make sure that tag also says that it has fruit. I've been noticing that there's a lot of them that don't have fruit now because people don't want the mess. But, it's a great resource. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's take another call. Nick in Oshkosh, we'll go to you next. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm sitting in my backyard watching two mallard drakes decide whether they're going to attack each other. But my question is about grackles. They have nested here for as long as I can remember, and suddenly this year, no grackles. And it's probably because of the weather, and I'm just wondering if we might see them later this season or if we'll see them next year again.
They may be coming in later as well, but what's happened this year is we sort of had winter and then we had summer. So grackles also are very sensitive to, they eat a lot of insects, so they're sensitive to a lot of pesticides and the material that you put on your lawn to make it green and that sort of thing. So those things affect insects, and it's possible that in our fervor to get to get summer underway, that I know a lot of people are using these things right now, and maybe in larger quantities than they have in the past. So that is also a possibility. Will they come back? If you have good habitat, they should come back. Yeah. Possibly not the same pair, but if you have good habitat, they'll be back.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Appreciate the call. On to Lee in Green Bay. Lee, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks. My concern is, I'd like Marge's response. Our rough grouse population is declining, no matter what anybody wants to say, it is. I know they're on a seven, roughly, year cycle, but I was wondering if maybe, since they introduced turkeys to the state, being that they feed, their feeding machine, with the rough grouse nesting on the ground, has that contributed to either the nest, the eggs, the very small young rough grouse that might be attacked or eaten by the turkeys?
There's a few things that affect our populations of birds, and I think that any time we start thinking of one individual, we're probably missing the bigger picture. A short answer is I don't think so. However, they were introduced, and that is always kind of a difficult topic, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Our birds per se here that are here now, our turkeys are from, actually their DNA is from Missouri. So, they're a little bit different than the birds that were here originally. I don't think that that's a problem. I think that more likely it's the fact that we have people population is encroaching on more wilder areas, so we don't have as many numbers, and we're taking, our four-wheelers and all-terrain vehicles back into areas that have never been touched before. So that's something that we're not thinking about. When you walk through a woods or through a wooded area, it takes you more time. And, you're using less, basically footprint than you would if you're riding a four-wheeler. And people need to understand that they do nest on the ground, and they're also that cryptic coloration. You don't see them until you're upon them, and their nests are also cryptic. So, you're stepping on them without knowing it. And people looking for mushrooms or whatever, I think that, this happens more than we know.
Yeah. And there's some habitat issues there with aspen. I mean, they need stands right. of aspen, young aspen, in order to really survive too. And as if that's not regenerating in as it was in the past, that's going to mean that there could be fewer grouse.
It all goes back to habitat. I think that, if it's there, if habitat is there and it's undisturbed relatively, they're going to be there.
Yeah. Thank you, Lee, for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's go to Jim, in Lake Geneva. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A little background. I worked for the DNR for about 15 years out in the field. And when I was younger, I was a very avid hunter and fisherman. I still buy the licenses for the last 20 years for both, and I don't do either. But it's simply my way of putting money into the DNR for wildlife management and things like that. But your guest, and I applaud her organization, but there are certain things I saw in my tenure where they would spend hundreds of valuable man hours, tens of thousands of dollars over a mallard duck with an arrow through it at a golf course because of public relations. And your guest mentioned a turkey that she was trying to help, and I applaud that, but it should be out of all their pockets, because there are certain animals like turkeys, pheasants, ducks, geese, especially geese, where cities are trying to get rid of them. They're killing them in some cases because of the damage they do to the park system. And there's no problem with, they're not endangered at all. In fact, there's an overabundance of these. And I think, I want to ask her the question, does she work with hunting groups? Because they're the ones responsible for Wisconsin having the turkeys, having elk, deer management, wildlife management, bringing back the eagles is a lot of that. And that, I think, is money well spent. But if she's rehabilitating things like wild turkeys, they're as common as mice in my basement. You just want to get rid of them because it's just not cost effective, and I think their resources would be better directed at maintaining habitat and building habitat is what the hunters do.
All right, thanks very much for calling, Marge. You probably have a different perspective on that.
Well, first of all, I think the caller doesn't know me very well, because we do work with hunters, we do work with trappers, and in all sports. I also buy a hunting and fishing licenses, even though I don't often have the opportunity to go out. What I talked about this morning was picking up a dead turkey to feed to my eagles that was on the road, not rehabilitating it. I feel this way, though. I think that particularly in the case of children, if they find something, and even for me, it's even if it's an invasive species, they have used a part of being a human. That's a very, very good part of them. I think that the definition of humane in the Oxford Dictionary is showing compassion or benevolence intended to have a civilizing effect on people. And that civilizing effect is something that we need more in our society, not less. So does it matter about I'm not familiar with the duck with an arrow through it, but it doesn't come out of state or federal funds. And frankly, I think there's a lot of teaching to be done with any animal that we take in. We mostly treat, threatened endangered species and species that do have population issues. But for the public, I think raising awareness to something that we can do and that they can make a difference, even if it is just helping people understand that these things happen and they really shouldn't. So I think it's worth it if we can reach a young person who maybe would go on and work for the DNR in the future, like yourself, rather than having sort of a callous attitude toward wildlife.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. I want to go. Turkeys have come up here a couple of times. And you've got Tori the turkey. That's got his own,
we have Tori
her own
the turkey.
Facebook page and everything else.
You know, Tori was a little wild poult that was brought in with smoke inhalation, and we treat a lot of very difficult cases, and birds have very small but very efficient lungs. So we saw this opportunity for this little poult coming in as a opportunity for us to learn maybe different techniques that would help save other species, including endangered species. And I think that's the thing that many people don't realize, is that the work that we do really prepares us for maybe saving populations, birds that are declining. I worked for the California Condor Recovery Program many years ago, and that really came to fruition. I was on the team that trapped the last one in the wild, and so, that's very near and dear to my heart. But, yes, Tori the turkey, she lived. We did good with her, and she lived and is a human imprint. She does live in our house, and she's going to be 8 years old on the 2nd of June. She goes outside, but she's a character. She has a lot of fans on her Facebook. She knows how to use a remote control. She's quite the princess.
Well, you've got some wonderful photos. Well, that'd be something to go to your Facebook page. You, I'm sure, have photos of Tori on your Facebook.
And Tori the turkey, she has her own Facebook. Yeah, she's quite a girl. People send her gifts and things, and she knows when that box arrives and it has almonds shaking in it. She loves them. She rips them open. I mean, she knows. She gets it.
Oh, man. I tell you what, that is absolutely wonderful. Before I forget about it, and before we take another call here, if people do want to contribute to either you or another rehabber, but talk about yourself here.
Well, donations are always really important. I think for any rehabilitation group, most of us are nonprofits, and we support the person in your area if they're doing good work. You can complement that by helping them. But we have many different ways of helping. We need volunteers, of course, and that's a way that you can help and come up. And we have all kinds of things, from gardening to painting and building to do. We are actually getting fairly desperate for volunteers. We're located in Little Antigo, so we're kind of in a remote part of the state, and important part of the state for endangered species, not so much for people to come and help. But donations are go to our website. There's a way you can donate through PayPal. We have bird adoptions that you can do that and have maybe a little card for your mom or whatever, that you've adopted a bird, for Mother's Day or Father's Day, that sort of thing. And there's all kinds of things that you can do to help and support wildlife rehabilitation.
And so, and on the volunteer side, it's not necessarily just working directly with an animal, a bird, although it could be.
It isn't. I mean, it isn't right away. And I think that often people are thwarted by knowing that we work with a lot of bald eagles, is that, well, they're not going to come and flip around eagles, that sort of thing. No, absolutely not. There's so much to be done to support the work that we do. I mean, the facility upkeep and maintenance and that sort of thing. But certainly transporters, if you want to and you show an interest, we can help you to learn how to do these things. But you would have to do them, of course, at our facility, not anywhere else.
Yeah. Christina in Glenwood City, thank you very much for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi there. Thank you. Well, I've got two questions. The first one is, I've got a duck boneless, skinless chicken breast and venison in my freezer that I'm holding on for you.
Bless you.
I plan to deliver it in June, and I want to confirm, first of all, that you can use that.
We can use that as long as it, you know, hasn't been thawed. Our birds would love to have it.
Oh, great. And in addition, I'm also collecting rags and blankets, miscellaneous things like that.
Thank you so much. We love you.
Really looking forward. Haven't been there yet. Looking forward to hopefully getting a tour in June. And then my other question is, this year, because of the snowstorm that we had, I was cutting up apples and fruits, putting that out, hoping that that would help these birds, such as the robin. Is there any benefit to that?
You know, there is a benefit to it. And I think that in a lot of times, a lot of situations during this last event, we were a little late in getting the word out. We actually didn't realize it was happening until it was happening. So the birds at some point weren't able to digest those things that you were putting out for them. We ended up having to tube feed birds that were brought into us. There is definitely a benefit to it, and we really appreciate it. I'm sure that that they were very happy to have it.
I know my father-in-law was his suet feeder. A robin practically lived on that suet feeder throughout that whole snow period there and ate a lot of suet. Hopefully that was, well, I'm sure it was useful for the bird.
You know, I think that it wouldn't be its normal food, but it is fat. And the ones that we were seeing come in weighed, you know, 40 grams, 39 grams, and their natural weight should have been 80. So they were far under their natural weight. And when it's just like any organism that's starving, if you give a person a steak and they haven't had food for a long time, it'll make them sick. But these birds were so malnourished that they were not able to eat any solid food. We were having to tube feed them liquid food for actually up to a week or more before they could actually ingest even a berry.
Oh, man. Did you have a lot come in?
We did. We had over 300 calls, and we had a lot of I might add that these things went round the clock because you have to give them a small amount of food, and then, you have to keep doing it. So we were very busy and pretty tired by the time this ended.
So 3 in the morning, you might have to be out there feeding.
Absolutely, and for our baby birds, too. I mean, this is going to happen in the summer, but this was a different event, and they were so very thin that, you know, we had to give them just a tiny bit at a time to get their metabolism working again. Everything happens like even organ failure. So, you know, we were fighting a battle, but we were able to release many of them, and we were just really pleased to see them go.
Well, you're doing wonderful work, Marge, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, and I'm sure we'll have a chance to visit again.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Larry.
I appreciate it so much. Marge Gibson, founder and executive director of Raptor Education Group, Inc., and what's your Facebook page, or what's your website again and Facebook page?
www.raptoreducationgroup.org, O-R-G.
Marge Gibson. She'll be back, and we will talk with her again. It's always a pleasure. Coming up, we're going to switch to the fishing rod and the fishing reel and boats and equipment and talk with our next guest, Justin Geike, about fishing in Wisconsin. That next here on the Ideas Network.